This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. The inevitable has happened. Cell phones now outnumber conventional landlines. In fact, that happened more than 6 months ago, and we're just catching up with the calculation. According to government statistics announced last week, at the end of 2004, a little over 181 million of us owned cell phones. That compares to something like 177 million old-fashioned access wires. At first, many of us rationalized these devices as bat phones for emergency use only, but these days, half the world seems to be talking and walking at any one time, and even conversation is getting a little passé. We use our cell phones to play video games, download music, play online poker, even watch TV. Will we eventually abandon our computers and televisions and just use cell phones? A bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Amy Dickinson, the author of the advice column Ask Amy, to talk about the American manners and cell phones. But first, we're joined in the studio by Walt Mossberg, personal technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal, to take a look at the near future of cell phones. If you have questions about new technology or about where, when, and how loudly we can conduct our mobile conversations, our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org.
Right.
What's the cell phone you're carrying now, Walt?
Well, I carry a phone called the Trio, which is not the smallest phone, but it is pocket-sized and is vastly smaller than those giant, almost briefcase-sized phones that we used to have 15 years or so ago.
But even now, are we still virtually in the Model T era of cell phones?
Yeah. Actually, Neil, I call these things the devices formerly known as cell phones because we have liftoff in terms of the evolution, but we're just at liftoff. But already these things have morphed dramatically from devices for making voice phone calls to essentially little computers. And in this liftoff stage, there's tremendous potential and very interesting technology, but not always great execution by the cell phone companies and the cell phone carriers.
Mm-hmm. We'll get a little bit more into that in the future. But some of the new applications that are coming up for cell phones?
Yeah, you have to understand, even the standard cheapo little flip phone you buy from any store today in the United States has essentially the capabilities of a little computer. They use microprocessors like computers do. They have memory like computers do. Soon, and I'll talk about this a little later, they will have hard disks and massive storage. They don't yet. When you go up the scale of price and features in the cell phone store, you really get to things that in some ways the one I carry, the Trio, probably has more power and more storage and memory than the laptop I used 10 years ago. How many people use all these functions and how well designed in these functions are still an open question. But the capability of the device is significant. The phone I carry is a very good phone. It is also a very good email device. So it does what a BlackBerry email device does, but it's coupled with a good phone. It does web browsing, so if I have to look something up in Google or go to a website when I'm not in my office or near a computer and I don't want to lug a laptop, I can do it. It has games. It plays MP3s like an iPod.
Really?
Yeah. Let me show you, we can hear it. This is, I have probably 20 or 30 songs on here.
Walter, you're a fogey.
So that no, that's actually a new song from a relatively new band, only maybe 5-6 years old, named Fountains of Wayne. There's our music plug. It also has a camera. It also has a video camera functionality. It can take little movies. It can display pictures, and there are probably this particular phone is built on an open, well-known operating system from Palm. This phone can run thousands of programs that you can download from the web.
And now people are programming stuff for cell phones.
Absolutely. It started with ringtones, you know, which the cell phone companies like to sell. But many of the newer cell phones have standard software on them. In this case, it's the Palm OS. Microsoft makes an operating system for phones that's beginning to catch on. And there's a thing called Java, which comes from computers and is also on phones. And people can write software that runs on these things. Now, there are business factors. The big cell phone carriers, who I like to refer to as the Soviet ministries, have a chokehold and don't always let a lot of these things run on the phones. But we could, if they would loosen their grip, have a situation, as we did with computers, where we have a thousand flowers blooming and lots of things you can do on these things.
But there are people now sending entertainment packages out.
Yes. Yeah. That's in a controlled way, controlled by the cell phone carriers and with big cuts of money coming back to them. But yes, there are now what they call television. There's a service called Mobi TV. It's not really receiving broadcaster cable TV, but it's coming off a server. It's little clips of news and entertainment. And some people are making what are called mobisodes, which are kind of shrunk down versions of TV episodes that run on a cell phone.
We have an excerpt from one of these mobisodes. Okay. Listen in.
Sutton.
Yeah, send him in.
James, you wanted to see me?
Yes, Martin. Come on in. This is Donald Frick. He was found in a hotel room several hours ago. His neck was snapped.
Any idea who's responsible?
Well, tune in tomorrow for our next exciting episode. Is that what these are? You know.
Yeah, my instinct, Anil, is that these aren't being used very much so far by consumers. But the phone carriers, who are always looking to increase usage and revenues, are trying this. Now, I should say that we are behind the rest of the world in these unusual applications for phones. If you or your listeners have traveled in Europe or Korea or Japan, I mean, they see much more advanced and much more varied usage of phones. In Korea, for instance, they were doing these mobisodes and these kind of canned television shows a couple of years ago, and now the cutting edge there is there are at least a few phones that are going to be able to receive live TV, just as if you were on a TV set.
Wow.
Again, I don't know how well all these things will go over commercially in the U.S., particularly because of two limitations. One is we are just getting to the point where we have fast enough data speeds on our phone networks that these things are reasonable. And secondly, the user interfaces and designs of the phone, you know, the more stuff you jam in there, the more complicated it becomes to use the phone, and that's going to have to get sorted out.
Or our fingers are going to have to get smaller.
Yeah, one or the other. That's right.
Let's get some listeners in on the conversation. Let's go first to Paul. Paul calling from Prescott, Arizona.
Can you hear me now?
Yep, we can hear you now, Paul.
That's the basis of my question, is what's being done to improve reception technology without having to go to building more and more towers, as opposed to also making more gadgets?
Well, Paul, you're a throwback guy. You actually want the phone calls to be clear and to be received everywhere. How dare you suggest that? There are some things being done in terms of quality, but I have to say that I think most of the emphasis is on increasing the data speed, not the voice side, because most of these new things where they hope to make money are data applications. And for increasing coverage, it really does come down in a lot of ways to building more towers. As you sound like you may know, but maybe everyone doesn't know, we've made a transition from older analog cell phone technology to this digital technology, and the various phone carriers haven't all built out the networks to the extent they once had them in the old days. They're essentially building new networks. And in the case of one of the carriers, two of the carriers, Singular and T-Mobile, they're actually dumping the first digital technology they adopted 10 years or 8 years ago and replacing it with another. So there's lots of transition going on. And then there are some environmental issues which listeners will have different views on. There are places where cell phone reception isn't good, and you could use another cell phone tower, but people don't want it in their backyard. They don't want it in a park or near a some natural scenery, and you can understand that point of view, but it's obviously a conflict of competing interests, both of which may be valid.
Paul?
Appreciate your input. Thanks.
Thanks for the call. Here's an email from Richard in suburban New York City. Until American wireless providers implement a rational pricing scheme similar to that used in the rest of the developed world, this country will continue to remain at the back of the pack in innovative use of wireless devices. Would you agree?
No, well, I don't agree. I do think it costs too much, but I think there are some advantages in our schemes over what they have in some other countries and some disadvantages. In some countries, you don't pay for an incoming call to your phone. The caller always pays, and you can argue the pros and cons of that, but that might be better. On the other hand, in a lot of these countries, you can't buy these buckets of minutes that we buy, so you're paying a lot for each incremental minute. I do agree with the email in one sense. On the data side, that is, surfing the internet, getting email, these mm-hmm. television broadcasts, whatever, we still have these screwy plans at many of the carriers which require you to guess in advance how many megabytes of data you're going to use. I mean, I write about technology all the time, every week, and I can't tell you how many megabytes I'm likely to use on my phone. So I happen to use Sprint, and Sprint has a flat rate thing. You pick your voice plan, how many minutes you want, and then you pay them, I think it's $15 or $20 a month flat fee for all the data you want to use. Some things like television might be a flat extra fee. But we need to go to flat rates, just as we did at one point on the internet. You know, at one mm-hmm. point on the internet, you paid by the hour and all of that. And it really took off when AOL and others years ago went to a flat rate. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we have to have better pricing. The other thing about our pricing that I do feel is a problem is it's absurdly complicated. Anybody listening to this knows that if you go into a cell phone store and you try to buy, you pick out the phone you want and then you go to buy the plan, there are literally, and I'm not making this up, thousands of permutations in their computers for the kinds of plans you can buy and promotions and discounts, and it really needs to be much, much simpler.
Confusion is usually helpful for charging people more.
Yeah, I agree, and that may be what's behind it, but we could stand simplification there.
We're talking with Walt Mossberg, a personal technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal, about the future of cell phone technology. When a few minutes later in the program, we'll be joined by Amy Dickinson to talk about the future of etiquette and how we decide where and when and how loudly we can talk or hear entertainment on our cell phone devices. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. Email totn@npr.org. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's get another caller on the line. This is Lee. Lee's with us from Waco, Texas.
Hi.
Hi.
I also agree very much that the flat rate is something that we need to go towards. But the thing I'm looking forward to the most is when the phone isn't so much an in-house thing at the cell providers, where you basically go in and get a SIM card and go use whatever device you want with that card. I think that's where the big changes are going to come from, when the choice of devices begins to get so wide, where if you need something small, you can take a small unit that you own, you drop your SIM card in, and you've got a phone. If you want to read a book on the beach and you have a book reading device, that you can take that and put your card in that, so you don't have to take an extra device and you can use it as your phone as well. I think that when the devices get as easy as changing jackets or or your taste in it can be as different as what color your car is or what options you put on it, that's when the real big changes are going to occur.
And, Walt, this is where you get to the Soviet ministries.
Yeah, I agree very much with the caller. Basically, he's talking about separating the service that the carriers provide from the technology, whether the technology is the phone itself or software that you might want to run on the phone or some independent internet service or something you might want to receive. And in Europe, they have a system where you can very easily stay with your plan with your carrier and change phones without new contracts and all that kind of stuff we have to go through here, or very easily stay with your phone and change carriers, because they have these little, what he's referring to as a SIM card. It's a little chip that goes in the phone that basically hooks it up to a carrier. Now, we have that with some of our carriers here, but here the carriers, the government and the regulations we have created a climate where the carriers have immense power to block technology from reaching consumers. And I wrote a column about a month ago, the one where I called them Soviet ministries, saying that they have done way too much blocking of technology and that we should separate out. The ideal situation to me would be that you should be able to buy a phone or any other device. He mentioned a book reader. Mm-hmm. Anything that would use the cell phone network should be able to buy that and then contract for service. And the service probably ought to be portable, he was suggesting, between your different devices. Certainly the companies that built these networks at great cost, like Verizon and Sprint and T-Mobile and Singular, deserve a fair return on the building of that network. I'm not saying they should lose money, but that's what their return and their business should be, in my opinion. We pay them for the use of their network by the minute, some flat rate, whatever is reasonable, and then beyond that, they have nothing to say about what phone you put on that network, what services, software you use on that network. You know, Neil, it reminds me, some of the older listeners may remember a time in this country when you weren't allowed to buy a landline phone for your house. You had to, every phone was either black or one of two or three colors that the old monopolistic AT&T would allow you to have.
A good Western Electric phone, virtually unbreakable.
They were unbreakable. I'm sure they were murder weapons in many cases. They were very heavy. And Western Electric was a subsidiary of AT&T that made equipment. And AT&T constantly said, no, we can't allow you to make or sell or buy a non-AT&T phone because it might damage the phone network. So they made a fortune. People paid a rental fee on those phones that far exceeded the value of the phone. And then one day the government said, no, we're going to open this up. And you know what? The network didn't crash. Well, the cell phone companies, the Soviet ministries in this country say the same thing today. Unless we approve a phone, unless we okay its sale to the public for use on our network, you can't have one and use it on our network because it might damage our network. But I don't believe that. I don't think the network would crash. I think it's a matter of trying to control every element of the system to their profitability benefit, and I think it's wrong both in terms of consumer choice and in terms of technology.
Lee, thanks very much for the phone call. We appreciate it.
No problem.
When we come back from a short break, we'll take more of your questions for Walt Mossberg about the future of cell phone technology, and it'll also be your chance to ask Amy your most pressing questions about cell phone etiquette and protocol. Give us a call. Our number on whatever phone you'd like, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we are talking about the future of cell phones and cell phone technology. Our guest is Walt Mossberg, a personal technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal, with us here in Studio 3A. Whether or not the phones of the future will be taking your family portraits or organizing your schedule for you, bringing you TV pictures or live reports from the Olympics, it's clear the cell is here to stay. So how long will it take until we agree on the etiquette surrounding them? Is it okay to discuss your private life in public? Should you talk on the phone at work, on the subway, going home? Joining us now from the studios at Cornell University to discuss this murky area is Amy Dickinson, the author of the Chicago Tribune's syndicated advice column, Ask Amy. Amy, always nice to have you on the program.
Hello, Neil.
Hello. How often do you hear about cell phone etiquette as a problem?
Very often, actually, in my column, people write in with these vexing issues, and, you know, they want to know what to do when somebody else is being rude.
Mm-hmm.
And here's where, you know, we don't have any rules. You know, I think about when I read once that when cars were first invented, there weren't any rules, so people would just smash into each other. And that's kind of what the world feels like right now.
We were talking about being in the Model T era. This is a good analogy.
Exactly. And it's like we're smashing into each other. And I don't think that we need etiquette per se. I think we need some rules, like some just kind of basic safety and behavior rules, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, there certainly seems to be agreement that if you're riding on a mode of mass transit, the bus, the subway, it seems to be okay.
I know. And actually, as somebody who takes public transportation to and from work, I have to say the desire, the need to narrate your life, what the conversations I overhear, I don't know about, you know, other people, but at the end of my work day, the last thing I want to do is talk on the phone anymore to anyone. But the narrations I hear on the bus on the way home, you know, I'm passing this street, I'm seeing this, I'm doing that, and I think, you know, it's like we're speaking our every thought out loud.
Here's an email we got from Betty Bishop in Chester, California. One of our dogs ate my husband's cell phone. Well, she just chewed it up along with the remote to the TV, and he did not replace it. He likes not being tethered all the time. I rarely turn mine on. I don't like being immediately available to everyone all the time. And I overhear so many totally banal conversations, especially in the supermarket, that I'm convinced I'm right. I think people just talk because they can, not because they need to or because they have anything intelligent or important to say.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm so happy that Walt Mossberg he and his trio, I know, are very, very happy together. And I remember a time when, you know, having a cell phone was a mark of distinction. It was a bit of a, you know, a fashion item. And I think it was something that we enjoyed showing off, our bat phone, that we were so important that people needed to reach us.
Mm-hmm.
But now I have this theory that not having a cell phone is now going to be kind of the prestige thing to do.
Oh, you know, you're so important, you don't have to have one.
Exactly. Others take my calls for me. I think my own thoughts. You know, I was out to dinner in California, in Los Angeles. You know, nice place. And a man at the table next to me was wearing one of those, Walt, what are those, like, silver pod things called that are over your ear?
Oh, yeah. They're called Bluetooth headsets. They're wireless, and
it literally looked like a piece of macaroni hanging from his ear, and he had this thing in.
But he thought he was like Captain Kirk. I think that's
exactly
what he thought he was.
Well, what got me was it was one thing that he had this device on his head. He had two older teen, clearly his children, with him, and you know how your teenagers, like, they will. If you're geeky or dorky or jerk, like, who's going to tell you first? You know, your kids are going to tell you. They acted like it was totally normal to sit and eat, and no one asked him, Dad, will you take that thing out of your head? You know, I couldn't believe it.
I hate those things. I don't use them. But I think there's another – I think you're right about people who are too important for a phone. I think there's another category, which is people who have a phone and don't use it for voice calls. In other words, it's there for an emergency if they have to make a voice call or receive one. But for the most part, they use it for, like, email or – text messaging.
Mm-hmm.
Kids, teenagers,
mm-hmm,
are making way fewer voice calls and doing much more text messaging. And
now,
and I'm sure there are issues with that, but at least if they're doing that on the bus in the next seat to you, Amy, you're not going to hear it. And that's
important. Exactly.
That's good.
And am I right, or did a lot of us learn on September 11th, 2001, that our cell service did not work, but a lot of our text services
exactly
did work?
And that, in fact, that is exactly what happened in London the other day.
A week ago, yeah.
Yeah, because text messaging or email on a BlackBerry or on a Trio like I have takes less bandwidth. So, you know, if the networks are clogged, the text kind of stuff can still sneak through. Sometimes it's on a separate channel, but the main thing is it takes less bandwidth.
And it's a little bit more secure. Amy, tell us about a recent conversation you overheard. I think it was in a Starbucks here in Washington.
Oh, this is great. This was actually a couple of years ago. So I'm at Starbucks, and the you know, those tables are tiny. You are right next to people. A guy was sitting at the very next table, very close to me, talking on his cell phone loudly about an issue that was currently in the news. I knew instantly what he was talking about, who he was talking about. He was being very, very, very indiscreet about a matter that had to do with a Justice Department shakeup that anybody who read the newspaper would have known what he was talking about. And he was actually involved in the story and was disclosing some, you know, kind of up till then unknown details. And when he was done, I said to him, I am a reporter. And I know exactly what you're talking about, and I want you to know I've written it down, and if you happen to see it in the paper tomorrow, don't be surprised. And he was like, you know?
I think in Matt Drudge's column today or yesterday, he apparently was on a train sitting next to a senator, I think it was Senator Schumer from New York, who was talking about some of his plans to about the Supreme Court conversation, and winds up on Matt Drudge's website.
Well, and, you know, Matt, I mean, that geez. Senator, I mean, you cannot miss Matt Drudge.
That's what I'm going to say. How can you not
all the time?
You're next to Matt Drudge.
But
I mean,
this is a technological problem, Walter, because on regular phones, we hear ourselves back. So we can modulate our voices. Yeah. On a cell phone, we don't hear ourselves back.
Right.
Psychologically, we speak more loudly because we want to hear ourselves.
And it's called cell yell. And people do speak much more loudly. But I wanted to ask Amy about an even worse, more horrific stage of this that is driven by technology. You know, we have these situations, like Amy was mentioning, where you have to hear one end of the conversation. Now, to my horror, there is the spread of these phones where you have to hear both ends of the conversation. These are phones called push-to-talk phones. Nextel, a small company, had been selling them for years to construction crews and businesses.
They're walkie-talkies.
They're like walkie. It's a cell phone, but it can function like a walkie-talkie. Now I am seeing, I'm sitting in restaurants. I'm sitting on the Amtrak train between Washington and New York, and I see people using their phones as walkie-talkies. They hold the button down. They hold the phone 4 or 5 inches from their face. And now you not only have to hear their side, you hear the other person. So you hear the entire conversation. Have you encountered this, Amy?
I have, and actually some readers wrote into my column saying, you know, what bothers everybody the most is that they can only hear one side of the conversation. If you're sitting on a bus and you overhear two people talking and you get to be, you know, you're privy to both sides of the conversation, it's not so annoying. And so, yes, I have encountered this. And I do try to think, well, how is this different from sitting on an Amtrak train next to two people who are having an animated conversation that you're clearly overhearing?
I mean, it's louder. It tends to be louder because you get the cell yell on the on the person who's physically there, their end of it, and the speaker on the phone, of course, amplifies the other person's voice more than I think a normal human conversation.
You know, I was watching The Apprentice, and I think at the first season of The Apprentice, they had all of their contestants naturally using the speaker function on their cell phones so that we could, you know, be privy to all of the fascinating conversations they have. And I thought, oh my God, I don't know.
But we can look confidently to the future because there are no phones in Star Wars.
There are no phones in Star Wars. I guess that's right. But they probably have embedded, you know, phones under their skins.
Their chips,
I don't know. And there's one more awful thing about to happen, which is the FAA is considering the question of whether to allow people to make cell phone calls on airplanes. It's going to be technologically possible, but just because things are technologically possible doesn't mean we should do them.
Let's get another caller in on this conversation. Nikki. Nikki's calling from Grand Rapids in Michigan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just had a comment about some cell phone etiquette that I have observed when I was in Japan last year for about a week and a half. All the time that I was there in Tokyo, riding on the subways, in the masses of people, I never once heard a cell phone ring or saw someone talking on a cell phone. Everyone on the subway was quietly text messaging other people, and they're very polite about their cell phone usage, and I really hope that that'll kind of migrate over here along with all the new technology that they use in cell phones in Japan.
So maybe because they're more accustomed to more advanced technology, Walter, their etiquette is advanced as well?
Yeah, I mean, I'll defer to Amy on the question of manners in Japan or anywhere else since Amy is much better mannered than me. But but I suspect that part of it is also the sort of you know, it's more crowded in Japan in general, and long before cell phones, I think they had to work out some different, almost innate social rules because, you know, they're just much more crowding in public spaces there.
Now, you know what I do feel good about? I think we've gotten good about basic rules involving cell phones. When you're in a theater and you're asked to turn it off, most people do.
And here's an email to that point. Liam in Portland said, I think we're all agreed that taking calls in a movie theater should be a capital offense.
Correct.
Right.
And so when definite rules have been established, I think we've actually come a pretty long way in agreeing to all of us. I mean, it's not like you're going to be arrested if your cell phone rings. It's more like you're going to get beat up. But I think we've gotten better about observing these kind of no cell phone zones. When we're asked to and reminded, we do that.
Nikki, thank you very much for the phone call.
Thanks.
And we're talking about cell phones with Amy Dickinson of Ask Amy and with Walt Mossberg of The Wall Street Journal. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here's another email question, this one, David Blatty. Though I find these advancements in cell phone technology fascinating in and of themselves, what concerns me are the social ramifications. As time goes on, it seems to me that society is becoming less and less comfortable with being away from screens, games, TV, information, distraction, etc. TV screens and elevators are a perfect example, I think. What implications do your guests think this new technology will have on the average individual's ability to be comfortable with his or her own thoughts, or unthinkably, perhaps, silence?
Well, I'm one of the better-known technology writers in the country. I try out every new gadget. I use a lot of them. But I also believe that you need to be analog sometimes in your life. You need to get away from it. You need to actually have real physical contact with other people and things, and not just virtual things. And I think it's especially important for parents to establish what we used to call in our house when our kids were young, screen time. We had limits. You had so many hours of screen time a day, all screens combined, television, computer, video game, whatever. And then you had to do something with your imagination or go outside. And I think for adults, the same advice should apply.
Jill Donnelly in Tigard, Oregon, wrote, I have to say the most appalling use of cell phones I've witnessed is when I'm playing with my child at the park. I've seen more moms going on walks with their child talking on the phone the whole time. I've had children join up with us because their parents aren't playing with them. The other awful thing is that when one parent when it's one parent with a child having dinner and the parent will talk on the phone while ordering, eating, and paying, it's mind-blowing.
I agree. I agree completely. And I started seeing this a couple of years ago. I noticed a lot of young mothers pushing buggies, strollers down the street and talking on cell phones. And I thought, that is so appalling. And then I thought about it. When my daughter was a baby, when you're pushing a stroller, you're not exactly interacting with the child anyway. But then, like this emailer, I started noticing it on playgrounds, in McDonald's, places where you would normally interact with your child, if only to go,
You want fries with that? Yeah.
Exactly. And I agree. I actually have noticed quite a bit of that with very young children, and I wonder what it's like to be a toddler and to never quite get your mother's attention.
There's an interesting concept invented by a woman named Linda Stone, who formerly worked at Microsoft, called continuous partial attention. And the idea is that in this world, with all these devices and all this distraction, we are now, many people are now in a constant state of continuous partial attention. They cannot devote their full attention or even 90% of their attention to any one thing, including in the case you guys are talking about, their own children.
Finally, another question, email this, I think, to you, Walt. When will cell phones become wrist communicators, like we used to see in Dick Tracy?
Well, they already are. Companies in Asia, where they tend to love the wackiest gadgets, several companies have developed these already. In fact, there are televisions for your wrists. There are phones for your wrists. And, I call these celibacy devices, because if you wear them, you will never get a date, and probably never get married or other pleasures. And so I call them celibacy devices. Yeah, they're technically possible to do, and there may be a small market for them. I mean, if you want to understand how likely that is to take off, look around you and notice how many people have those watches that can also be calculators. Those have been out for 10 years.
Sure.
Nobody wears them except for a few people.
Mm. But you know what's funny, Walt? The minute I heard wrist communicator, I thought, ooh, I want to get me one. Oh, it sounds
great. Oh, well,
great.
I didn't mean to insult you, Amy.
Amy Dickinson, we'll send you one as soon as we receive it here at NPR. Thanks very much for being with us today.
Thank you.
Amy Dickinson writes the syndicated column Ask Amy. It begins in the Chicago Tribune and spreads out to newspapers all over the country. Walt Mossberg is the personal technology columnist for the Wall Street Journal. He joined us here in Studio 3A. Thanks for your time, Walt.
Thank you, Neil.
It's Science Friday tomorrow. Joe Palco will be sitting in for Ira Flatow. We'll see you Monday. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Cohen. We'll be right back.